once again to the Perimeter Church podcast. The last event of the Summer Olympics is the marathon. It ends right before the closing ceremonies. The runners finish inside the main stadium, entering to the cheers after 26 miles of effort. This is how Jesus brings us into the kingdom, not just getting to the finish line, but getting there with a roar. Lead teacher Randy Pope continues the series, The Ticket, Imputed Righteousness. Thank you for joining us today.
Well, there is nothing like a good comparison to put things in perspective. For instance, if you've been struggling with an ailing back and you think things could get no worse, my back is so horrible, and then what happens? You happen to see maybe a quadriplegic, you go, oh my goodness, no, I don't have it so bad. Or maybe you're at the hospital with a child and you're getting stitches for your child and you think, can it get any worse? And then you see that little child walk in with a bald head for their chemo. And you say, no, it's not as bad as I thought. Maybe it's an issue of you've had a fender bender. And you think, now my day is wrecked. How bad can it get? And then you hear or see the report of a fatal car crash, and you say, oh, how thankful I am. It's amazing how comparisons, the right comparisons, can make us so appreciative when otherwise we might not be at all. In Romans chapter 5, verses 12 through 21, we have what I would call a passage of comparison. If you have your Bibles, I invite you to turn there. And as you do so, I want to prepare you. This is a very, very, very difficult text. The text we're looking at this week, the subject matter, very difficult. The text itself next week, and these two really do tie together in a significant way because both are making comparisons for us. The text that comes up, oh, how challenging. I was away speaking, Carol was with me this last week, and as I was speaking, we were in our hotel, and I said, Carol, I want you to do me a favor. I want you to read through Romans chapter 5, where we are and where we pick up. I want you to just read 12 and following. Read the text. And tell me what you say. What do you think when you read that text? So she sat there and she read the text. In a few minutes, she looked up and she said, I'm glad I'm not preaching it. And I said, and I wish I weren't. Because it is a tough, tough text. Actually, I'm glad I'm teaching it, but I'm finding it very difficult to make simple. I'm going to do my very best, but I want you to know this. I want to kind of prepare you to say, look, hopefully, most of you at least, who know this church, you know that you come here to get fed. You don't come here just to get inspired. And this is a high-protein meal you're about to get. Are you ready? Okay. With that, last week, in case you weren't here, even if you were, to remind you, last week we talked about, in the text, about Adam's fall as he sinned. And we said at that moment when he fell that he lost his moral ability. Please keep that term before you. Think about that term, moral ability. Not natural ability. He did not lose his natural abilities to think and make decisions, which says he did not lose his free will. He has his natural ability, but what he does not have is a moral ability, which means this. He does not have the ability on his own to be able to embrace the grace of Christ, to understand the work of Christ, and to become a follower. He's lost that ability because of what he's done. Now, that's hard enough to understand, and we had to walk through that and explain that. But today, it raises a question that Paul is going to address in our text that I'm sure every one of us at some time have either questioned ourselves or wonder, how do you answer this question to someone who asks me as a Christian this question? How could it be fair for me to lose something as important as moral ability, where I now cannot even choose Christ, because that's not a natural ability. That's a moral ability. How am I to be responsible for something that somebody else did when I was not even there, long before me? Well, our text is going to address that question. I'm going to give you a thesis to kind of summarize what we're saying this week and next. Because of Adam's sin, we all sin and are condemned. That's a hard statement. Without the free gift of God's righteousness, the only alternative is eternal condemnation. Now, though I wrote this as far as the thesis, I did not write the text. I'm trying to say this is what the text says and this is what the text means. Do I think it makes sense? Absolutely. Was there a day in my Christian experience where I read this text and say, not only does it not make sense, I don't like it, it doesn't seem fair, it doesn't seem good. Those things have changed now. Somebody told me years ago, said, Randy, remember this, you never learn good theology. You earn it as you wrestle with it over time. But I'll say this to all of you that are new to the faith and new to the Bible, don't you dare have the thought, oh, you know what, I need to go somewhere where it's just simple and it's not easy, it's easy. No, 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 no. This is what you need. For you to take a truth and say, okay, I don't get the truth. I don't necessarily understand it. I can't see the beauty and value of it, maybe yet. But it starts right here in hearing it and knowing it. Whether we understand it, whether we feel it or not. Over time, as we began the growth experience, that which is true becomes a part of your experience of life. And the next thing you know, you're able to be set free because you shall know the truth, and the truth shall what? You tell me. Set you free. We all want freedom, but we don't want to get the truth and wrestle and actually have to labor with the truth so that we can be set free. This, by the way, folks, is truth that will unbelievably set you free. You resist this truth, you're going to struggle. I'm telling you, trust me in this one. You got to understand this over time. So if it's new to you, start up here. If you already got it up here, let's pray, God, sink it deep into me, because this is very important for my freedom and for my ability to be used of God the way I can and should be used of Him. Now, there's one primary truth, instead of having two or three, just one this week. Let me put it up for you. It goes like this. The concept of moral representation, which we're about to look at, is not new, but is, in fact, the story of the human race. It's the story of the human race. And we'll look at three verses, verses 12, and then we're going to jump. We'll catch the balance next week. Verses 18 and 19. So let me begin with verse 12. Here's how it reads. Therefore, after he's talked about the loss of moral freedom, everything we just talked about, just as through one man sin entered into the world, and death through sin, and so death spread to all men because all sinned. Now, Paul's Jewish readers are not going to embrace the idea of what he's teaching. He's teaching this idea of imputed righteousness. We're calling the series The Ticket. Our ticket into relationship and knowledge of God is this thing called imputed, placed within us, righteousness. Now, the Jewish people say, we don't buy imputed righteousness. We believe in works righteousness. Because God has given us a law, and if we obey the law, that's why he gave it, to obey it, and if we obey it, then we're in good relationship with God. Now, Paul's trying to wreck that whole mindset, say, no, 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 it's imputed righteousness. So, for him to be able to argue for imputed righteousness, at least effectively, what he has to do is he has to show that this imputation concept, the whole concept, hear that, the concept of imputation is a story, the story of the human race. He's got to say, what I'm telling you about Jesus and imputed righteousness, that's not new stuff, folks. It's part of our understanding as a Jewish heritage. We should know this. And so, he's really going to be teaching us something that, in my opinion, if we can't understand this whole concept as it's, call it the role of Adam, if we don't understand the role of Adam, I'm going to suggest we'll never really understand in our life experience the role of Jesus. And I have a feeling that if I were to do a quiz one-on-one with each of us here, I would imagine that a lot of us would have to say, I don't guess I really do understand the role of Adam. And my concern is there's a connection. Understand the role of Adam, understand the role of Jesus. Don't understand the role of Adam, don't really understand the role of Jesus. Then it's just going to be, I decided to follow Jesus. I'm trying to follow him. I obey him. I try to listen to him, do what he says. And that's my Christian life. It's just trying to obey Jesus and do what Jesus says. Oh, no, 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 no. Got to know more than that. So, in our text, in verse 12, we read some interesting words, just as. That there is a term of comparison, just as. Now, we're going to see the comparison, but first he's going to lay the foundation by giving us a threefold progression. I have it in your notes, so you can follow that easily. Very simply, it goes like this. Number one, sin entered the world through one man. Now, very important, entered. The word literally is invaded. It also means intruded. And then it says, through one man. I know that there are a lot of us here that say, I don't understand how you folks believe in the literalness of the Bible and so forth and so on. And by the way, do we believe everything in the Bible is literal as we are challenged to say that we do? No. No. I've often used the little example, do I believe that God owns only the cattle on 1,000 hills? No. But if you took it literally, you'd say, well, there are only 1,000 hills that God owns the cattle. I wonder which 1,000 they are. No. We take literal the things that were written to be taken literal by its context and who says it and how he says it, and all that plays a factor. Well, it's interesting. The Apostle Paul says through one man. He believed in the historicity of one person named Adam. And it's through what happened with Adam that we are affected. Then the second of this progression, death entered the world through sin. So now we have sin. As a result of sin, we have death. Now, Genesis 2:17, a familiar passage to many, it says, but from the tree of the knowledge of good and evil, you shall not eat. For in the day that you eat from it, and he's talking to Adam, you will surely die. Now, we need to understand that is a physical death and it's a spiritual death. Both are included in that concept of death. Takes us to the final progression. Sin and death spread to all men. That's where you and I struggle. All right, wait. I understand that sin entered the world, and because of sin, death. Okay, got that. But wait, now, it says that because of that sin of Adam, all die? All of us die? Everything in the context would give us an understanding that here it is meant all, meaning every person. By the way, there are times in the Bible, we're going to look at some of the, a little while, where all does not mean every person. But it certainly means more than just Adam's death. That's a given. So we say, all right, well, what does this passage really teach? Well, everything that's coming out of it is going to say, oh, the teaching is that all individuals, every person dies because of the sin that we have because of Adam. Very, very challenging. Now, it's interesting when it says, because all sinned. Now we say, no, wait, I'm a sinner, and I am sinning because he sinned. If you look at the text, it's in a tense of the verb, which is aorist tense. Doesn't mean a lot to most of you. But the aorist tense is a once-for-all action. So what Paul is saying, what he's intending to communicate to the Jewish people at this point, this is a one-time action in history that has effect to all the people. It's not saying at some time or another every person will sin. It says no, because all sinned in Adam. Well, that leaves us with three views that people have taken over the course of history of how to view this. Only one, I suggest, is according to the biblical text. Let me give you all three. If you want to read this in much greater detail, in his book, Chosen by God, R.C. Sproul walks through this in a much deeper way than I'm going to do it right now. But here are the three different views. You have them in your bulletin. Number one is the myth view. There are many who would say Adam's sin was not historical. It was only a mythological story that was told to kind of explain the concept of sin. And thus, people are born innocent, and there is an age of accountability. Who knows when it is? But at some age, people become accountable because they can reasonably put it together and understand. And at that point, they're held accountable, and therefore, at that point, sin is universal to all people. And that's how we come to this idea. I'm going to say, no, 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 no. Why would we say no? One, because Paul certainly believed that this was a historical individual. But secondly, let me ask this question. Why would babies sometimes die? Death comes because of sin. And if the baby is not yet of the age of accountability, wait, I don't get that. No, no. It's not a myth. So some people say it can't be a myth. But maybe instead of the biblical concept, maybe it is the, what I'm going to call here, the realist view. The realist view. This is a person who says, well, everyone can't be, you know, responsible for something someone else does. So apparently, everybody that would ever exist in this world, God knows the number, were all collectively involved in one person, of which little pieces of that come out in each individual person. So there we all did it, and as a result of that, this happens. All souls existed before we were conceived. We see nothing in Scripture to teach that whatsoever. So it leaves what I'm going to suggest, and certainly Paul is going to teach, the representative view. Third view, representative view. That is that Adam was a representative to all mankind. And God made a covenant with Adam that would affect all his people, the human race. Much like we would say a president today might sign a treaty and he as a representative to the country of the United States of America signs a treaty that has an impact on every single American for the history of our country. That's what you call a representation. This view says that's exactly what Adam was to us. The benefits or the consequences are going to be experienced by all as a part of that race that Adam is the head or the representative of. This is a Hebrew concept. It is very, very Eastern. The Western mind that you and I have says, oh, I don't get this one. We say, no, everything's individualistic. Everybody just does whatever they do. It affects them. No, no, no. But this was very much a part of the understanding of the Eastern mind. It's what we now would call corporate personality. I'm going to encourage you to hold on to that term, corporate personality, where there is a corporate large group, one personality. Where we see this taught among many places in the scriptures. In Hebrews, it talks about Levi, the grandson of Abraham, and how this corporate personality affected him. But Achan is the best story. Many of you know that story where Joshua and the people of Israel are coming in to take Jericho. You remember the high walls and all? And Jericho was a major city, fortified with all these weapons. How can we take them? And Joshua says, well, God says we're going to walk around the city and blow horns and the walls fall in and we conquer these people. Just follow what God says. And they did, and they conquered. Then they've got the next city beyond them is a little city called Ai. It's a small town in comparison. The Jewish people should be able to just run right over them. They go in and they get defeated by Ai. Joshua goes to God and says, what's going on? What happened? He said, didn't I say there was a ban on all the possessions of Jericho and no one was to take anything? Silver, gold, livestock, nothing? Yeah? Well, someone has sinned. And then to make the story short, God gathered the people of Israel the next day. Israel made up of 12 different tribes. He says, you 11, you can go. Each tribe made up of clans, all you clans, but this one can go. Each clan made up of families, all you families can go, but one family. And that would be an extended family. Now, probably everything from the text would say that no one knew in that family except Achan, who was the perpetrator. And God said, Achan is the one. And then what did God say? Now, all will lose their life as a punishment for his sin. And every one of us hear that and say, that is not fair. And when we say that, we have no concept of what we've just said if we're a Christian. Because that little concept there is the single greatest thing that ever happened outside the death of Jesus Christ. That concept is the single greatest thing that has happened for you and me as Christians. And for you that are seekers, were it not for that concept, give this thing Christianity up. It has nothing to offer you. Let me help try to explain. So hope you understand, the representative view is the view that Paul is teaching throughout the text. So maybe we say, okay, there is a representative view. That is how this works. Okay, there is corporate personality. Now the question says, well, is it fair that someone represented me and I didn't have a choice? At least when I vote for a president or whoever I have, at least I get to some involvement in trying to determine who that'll be. I wasn't there. I didn't choose Adam. Excuse me. But I'll tell you what, that is that's a pretty bad presumption there. That's presuming a couple things. It presumes that were I to make the choice, I would make a better choice than a holy God who was perfect, who made a perfect choice. That I would have made a better choice. No, I wouldn't have made a better choice. You wouldn't have made a better choice. None of us would. Our Creator made that choice. So now let's read verse 12 again. Therefore, just as through one man sin entered into the world, and death through sin, and so death spread to all men because all sin. Now we go to verse 18. So then, as through one transgression there resulted condemnation to all men, even so through the act of righteousness, here comes Jesus, there resulted justification of life to all men. Even so. You see that? Now there's the comparison. Even so. Through what Jesus did, there resulted justification of life to all men. Now, this word justification of life, these words, it means justification which issues forth life. We're declared right by God and we receive life. And it says to all men. Now here, people say, all right, this is the teaching of universalism. Everybody is actually saved. There are many that call themselves Christians that say, I think all people are saved They just don't know they're saved. It's our job to declare them as saved, and once they hear they're saved, they'll begin acting like they are. Well, we have to understand, whenever the word all is used in the Bible, it does not always mean every single person. For instance, Luke 1, that all the world should be taxed. Was the whole world taxed, every individual? No. Only certain people were to be taxed. And only certain places of the world at that point got taxed at this time. Or in John 3, all men came to John the Baptist. Did every individual human alive come to John the Baptist? No. He's saying all types of people. In Acts 3, it says, God will pour out his spirit on all flesh. Well, that would mean all flesh became Christian? No. That would be on his seed. And so he's saying all kinds of people, every tribe, tongue, nation, yes, but not every individual. Now, we're going to see a whole bunch of comparisons. Let me quickly give you the comparisons, and then I'm going to give you kind of the big picture to understand this. The comparisons between Adam and Jesus. Adam, he disobeyed, and man fell from righteousness. There's Adam. Think about Jesus. Jesus obeyed, and as a result of that, fulfilled our righteousness. If you look at the two, notice that both were appointed by God. Both were head of a people, Adam, the race at large, the human race, Jesus, his redeemed family. Both had a covenant with God. Both represented their seed. Both passed on their work's effect to their people. I mean, it's just it's the same thing. And it says, as a result, many are made righteous. Now, I won't read it, but if you're a note taker and you want to go back and go deeper, read 1 Corinthians 15, 21 through 22. As in Adam all die, in Jesus all shall be made alive. And therefore, here's the concept of corporate personality. Now, I'm going to close with an implication from the text. But before I do, and I'll probably repeat this next week, but I want to make this simple. When I'm sitting with somebody over the table and having lunch and knowing they're never going to understand Christianity unless they get this concept, so I introduce this to anybody I'm sharing my faith with. And in doing so, I want to make it simple. So I don't walk through a Bible study like this with them. I did that with you. You're the family of God and our guests that have come. But I'm going to say, this idea of corporate personality, I'll just tell you what it is. And then I say, do you know, our immediate response is to say, I don't like corporate personality. I think it's a bad deal. I think God is not so good to do that. Because he let one person, and he sinned, and now look at me. I come in this world, I'm conceived in sin. I have no moral ability. It's just not right. And I say, it's the greatest thing that ever happened to us. Here's why. Let's assume Adam here, and let's assume that there is no corporate personality. So we know that Adam sinned, right? So what happens to Adam? He dies, physically and spiritually. No corporate personality, though. So he has a child. Now, let's assume there's no corporate personality, and he slips up at age 42 and sins. Uh-oh. So he dies, all right? So he has a child that for some way happens to be perfect till the day, you know, life is ended. Never, you know, of course there's no death for him because he never sins, so he lives for millions and millions and millions and millions of years or whatever, you know. But his child did sin at age 14, 18, he died. So now the truth of it is, if there were no corporate personality, reality says every person will sin, right? Every person would sin. I mean, God's best choice of Adam didn't sin. All right, what would make us think that we would? So the result is nobody lives. We all die. But because of corporate personality, there could be a second Adam. You know, Jesus is called the second Adam in Scripture. Why? Because he's going to represent two. Adam represented mankind. Jesus is going to represent his family. And so the way Christianity works, seeker, if you want to understand the faith, it's not that you did something. No, you realize, I can't do anything. I need a representative. And so you go to the representative, Jesus, and you say, would you represent me? Can I come into your family? Can I join you? And he embraces us. And at that moment, we still sin, and some of us in a pretty ugly way. In fact, all of us in an ugly way, but some of us in just extremely heinous ways. And he says, you know what? If you're ever represented by me, you're covered in my righteousness. Every person down the family line is viewed as righteous as Jesus, even as every one of us in Adam are viewed as sinful as Adam. Were there no corporate personality, no one would be saved. That's good news for the Christian community. It's a beautiful thing. And I'll tell you what it'll do to you. It'll quit making you think, oh, wasn't I good to come over here and start following Jesus? Wasn't I good? Look at me following Jesus. You start saying, oh God, aren't you good to be my representative? One final closing thought. You'll see it in your outline. It goes like this. Let me put it up. Major implication: to admit one's state of sinfulness is not sufficient to enable the reception of God's righteousness. Hear this. One must take responsibility for his sinfulness. If you and I are living the Christian life saying, yeah, I'm a sinner, but not my fault. What could I have done anyway? Jesus, save me. That's a whole lot different than, oh, Jesus, look how responsible I am for my sin. Would you please forgive me? And he who is forgiven much, what? Loves much. Our forgiveness is so small in the Christian community today. Oh, yeah, he forgave me, but. No, it's he forgave me, exclamation point. And that's where love begins to, I didn't create this love. It's the truth set me free. It birthed love in me because I'm seeing things as it is, not like it appears to be the way I want it to be, the way I hoped it would be. No, we got to get rid of that stuff and say it's what he says and we hold on to it and, oh, how it sets us free. The question I have would be this. Which humanity do you belong to? Do you belong to Adam's by birth? Or do you belong to Jesus's by a rebirth? Or maybe put it this way. Who represents you? Do you leave here with a little bit of better understanding of being represented by Jesus, more so than you're thinking, all right, I'm doing a better job now of following Jesus. You're going to find something happen to you. You'll find yourself wanting to follow him more because it'll birth love. And love is what binds the relationship. Don't know if you get it, but I hope you'll at least listen to it, chew on it, think about it, and for God's sake and your own, don't say, that's complicated. I'll just leave that to somebody else. Dig through it. When you understand your representation, that's when you understand the work of your Savior. That's when you fall in love with God.
You've been listening to the Perimeter Church Podcast. Perimeter Church is located at the corner of Highway 141 and Old Alabama Road in Johns Creek, Georgia. Please visit our website at www.perimeter.org for more information, to give us your feedback, and find other messages from our teaching team. Thanks for making this podcast a part of your day.